All right. All right, so we are going to Isaiah chapter 6, and you can see the subject, God is holy. We're going to begin here with verses 1 to 4. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims, each one had 6 wings, with twain he covered his face, and with twain he covered his feet, and with twain he did fly. And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the posts of the door moved at the voice of him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke. Well, chapter 6 is the beginning of Isaiah's prophetic ministry, and its events actually occurred before his pronouncements of the first 5 chapters that actually opened this book. This chapter 6 is Isaiah's call and commission as a prophet to take God's message, particularly to the people of Israel and Judah. Now, Isaiah lived and prophesied during the reign of at least 4 kings of Judah. That'd be Uzziah, which is mentioned here in verse number 1. His son Jotham, his grandson Ahaz, his great-grandson Hezekiah. And if the tradition is accurate, he was actually killed by Manasseh, and that would be the 5th king of his time. And that would put his ministry at around about 60 years long. But we're not entirely certain about that, but certain of these 4 kings at least. Now, Uzziah reigned for 52 years in Jerusalem, and he had the most prosperous reign, second only to Solomon in Israel's history. And the kingdom of Judah during his time was strengthened. It was established as a powerful nation. It was a force in the world, and Jerusalem was greatly fortified with walls and towers. But Uzziah was stricken with leprosy towards the end of his life. That was because of his pride. He wanted to take upon himself to perform the office of a priest, which was not permitted to him. And during his last year of life, in fact, the Assyrians invaded northern Israel and carried some of them away into captivity, a sign of things to come. Jotham, his son, succeeded Uzziah, and he reigned for about 16 years. And the kingdom continued to enjoy that prosperity. But the Assyrians were gaining a lot of power, and the northern kingdom of Israel, in fact, had formed an alliance with the kingdom of Syria, and they also began to threaten Judah. Ahaz succeeded Jotham, and he also reigned for about 16 years in Jerusalem. And the situation in Judah really began deteriorating during the time of Ahaz. Ahaz went against the word of the Lord, and he sought help from the Assyrians, which God had specifically sent Isaiah to tell him not to do. And ultimately that led him into the idolatry of the Assyrians and bringing the kingdom of Judah with him. And then Hezekiah succeeded his father Ahaz, reigned for about 29 years. And during Hezekiah's time, there were a lot of reforms. Hezekiah was certainly one of the better kings of Judah. So the first 5 chapters of Isaiah most likely occurred during this latter part of Jotham's reign to somewhere in the earlier part of the reign of Ahaz. And immediately after this in chapter 6, beginning in chapter 7, Isaiah is speaking to Ahaz. And so it's most likely was during that time. And these first 5 chapters contain rebukes in the form of woes against Jerusalem and against Judah. And there were pronouncements in these first 5 chapters of judgment, interspersed with messages of hope. And there are various rebukes in these first 5 chapters. For instance, as you begin chapter 1, verses 2 to 4, the people were woefully ignorant of the Word of God. They were lifted up in national pride, chapter 2, verses 10 to 22. They were actually seeking out fortune tellers, chapter 2 and verse number 6. They were guilty of gross vanity, chapter 3, verses 16 to 23, and chapter 5, verse 19. Their injustices are also spoken of in chapter 5. Their covetousness in chapter 5. Their drunkenness in chapter 5. And of course, their idolatry will even be more clearly denounced in the rest of Isaiah. So chapter 6 is set against a dark backdrop, making the vision of the Lord's holiness all the more brilliant by this contrast. Now, verse 3 in this chapter sounds this dominant note. And one cried unto another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory." So as the seraphims call and respond to one another in this refrain of praise, they are praising the holiness of God. Holy is the Lord of hosts. God's holiness is a major theme throughout Isaiah's prophecy. Of course, that is our subject today as well. But first, we need to know what this vision Isaiah had was about. And then we want to know, what does it mean that God is holy? So let's begin looking at this vision here in Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1. "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and His train filled the temple. Above it stood the seraphims, each one had six wings. With twain He covered His face, and with twain He covered His feet, and with twain He did fly. And one cried unto another and said, 'Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory.' And the posts of the door moved at the voice of Him that cried, and the house was filled with smoke." So Isaiah was in the temple in Jerusalem, and he says that he saw the Lord. Isaiah was not transported somewhere like John from the Isle of Patmos, nor was it a dream that Isaiah was having. He simply says that he saw the Lord. He saw a vision of the Lord. But what exactly was Isaiah looking at? So he was in the temple and he saw the Lord on a high throne. He was larger than the temple. He was above or over the temple. The hem of His kingly robes came down into and filled the temple, much like how His glory filled the earth that the seraphims spoke about. There were seraphims, and the word indicates that these are some sort of burning and fiery beings. They are described as having six wings, and they are flying above the Lord on His throne. And they are declaring praise to the Lord, who is, as they say, holy. And in fact, repeat that thrice. They pronounce that the earth is full of His glory. And then one of them flew to the altar, as you go on reading in chapter number 6. One of them flew to the altar, took the golden tongs and a burning stone from the altar and touched Isaiah's lips with it. Isaiah also heard the voice of the Lord. Again, as you continue reading through the rest of this chapter, he hears the voice of the Lord. Not only does he hear the Lord's voice, but he responds to the Lord, and they actually have a dialogue. The Lord sitting on this high throne over and above the temple, the hem of His garment filling the place, the seraphim flying about, and He hears and speaks and has response, conversation, if you will, with the Lord. Now, what exactly did Isaiah see? Well, notice in verse number 5, "Then said I," Isaiah speaking here now, "woe is me, for I am undone, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. So Isaiah says in verse number 5 that he saw the King, the Lord of hosts. Now John, writing in his gospel in John chapter number 12, verses 36 to 43, actually refers to this vision of Isaiah. And in verse 41 there, he says that Isaiah saw his glory and he spoke of him. Meaning specifically that Isaiah saw Jesus Christ in his glory. And that is who he spoke of. Now the seraphims proclaimed that the whole earth, at the end of verse number 3, was full of the high king's glory. So what does that mean? Well, glory, the word for glory here in the Hebrew is term is kavod. And it literally means weight. And it's used more figuratively to speak of a person as being a person of weight or a person of dignity. Their presence and their being is a weighty presence. They enter a room and they are the weighty person in that room. So this is speaking of honor. Honor that attends things such as authority and rank. And the term is actually significant throughout the Old Testament to refer to power and to refer to kingdom or to reigning. And particularly in reference to the coming King Messiah and his reign upon the earth is this term glory or kavod used. Now the Psalms uses this term as well as other terms that are associated with messianic kingship repeatedly. So the first use of this actually occurs in Psalm number 3, where David refers to Yahweh as my glory and the lifter of my head. That's in verse 3 of Psalm number 3. Glory there is the word kavod that David uses, and he acknowledges that that is from God. And it is associated with God lifting David's head. Well, Psalm 3 follows Psalm number 2. Psalm number 2 is a substantial and significant messianic prophecy that opens the Psalms. Psalm 2 speaks of the nations raging and plotting against God and his anointed king that he will install on Zion. Psalm 3 begins with David lamenting those who have risen up against him, using the same word that is used there in Psalm 2 and verse 2 about the nations and rulers that have risen up against God and his anointed. So David suffers this opposition as the anointed king in prefiguring the greater David, Jesus Christ. Also in Psalm 3:3, that lifting up of the head refers to the exaltation of kings or the lifting up of kings to their place, the enthronement of kings, if you will. And the phrase is actually used in reference to the Messiah in Psalm 110 and verse number 7. So glory is used repeatedly. Kavod, this Hebrew term, is used repeatedly throughout the Old Testament in association with kingship, and particularly the Davidic kingship that will be fulfilled in the kingship of Jesus Christ. So when John spoke about Isaiah seeing Christ's glory, he referred to his future glory. In other words, Isaiah saw Jesus Christ on the throne of his glory. Jesus also spoke about this time in Matthew chapter 25 and verse 31, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 28, Jesus said unto them, Verily I say unto you that ye which have followed me in the regeneration when the Son of Man shall sit on the throne of his glory, ye also shall sit upon 12 thrones judging 12 tribes of Israel. Isaiah saw Jesus Christ in his future glory as messianic king. He is one of the ones who had a rare sight of Christ's glory, his future glory. You think of the three on the Mount of Transfiguration, Peter and James and John. They got a sight of this glory. John again in the book of Revelation, he got a sight of this glory. And Isaiah got a sight of this glory. 700 years before Jesus was even born, he's looking at Jesus Christ on his throne of glory, sitting there high, lifted up, exalted, and his hem of his garment, of his kingly robes, filling out the temple, just as his glory, his kavod, the power of his reign fills the earth. So this is confirmed. In other words, the whole earth being full of his glory as the seraphim speak of. This is a phrase also associated with the messianic kingdom later. In other words, the earth being filled with the glory of the Lord, or with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord. This is associated later in Isaiah chapter number 11. It's also in chapter number 40. It's also used in Habakkuk's prophecy in chapter 2 and verse number 14. So that is what Isaiah saw. And in all of his glory, his holiness is emphasized. So what does it mean that he is holy? Well, central to this vision, we could say, in fact, that it's the center that holds all together, is the holiness of God. And the holiness of God is seen here. It is seen in the person of Jesus Christ, whom the writer of Hebrews described as the brightness or the radiance of God's glory, as the express image or the exact imprint of his image or nature, the one who upholds the entire universe by the word of his power. That's Hebrews chapter 1 and verse number 3. His holiness is seen. So what does holiness mean? We probably immediately think of holiness in moral terms. We maybe think of God's holiness involving purity and moral goodness. And it certainly does. The word for holy, when it is used as an adjective, it describes a person or a place or an object as being clean, as being pure, as being consecrated or set apart. And so it indicates being separated from common use. So when the instruments of the tabernacle and later of the temple were consecrated or made holy, they were set apart, particularly for the service of God. They weren't to be put to a common use. So think about a cup that maybe was used in the offering of the pouring out offerings unto God. Well, this was not a cup that you would get up and drink your morning coffee out of. It was set apart for a particular use. That was to pour out a drink offering to God. That was what it was for. That was what it was reserved for. And it wasn't used in any way that was common. And that's what this word holiness indicates. When it is used as a noun, particularly when it's used in reference to God, it emphasizes separation. It emphasizes being separate from all of his creation. It includes His goodness and His uprightness and all of those things, yes. But that primary emphasis of the Word is the fact that God is entirely separate from everything else that exists. Everything else He has created and made, and God is entirely different from all of it. So the central idea of God's holiness is just that. God being separate. He is separate from all of His creation. And Isaiah is pointing to this actually back in verse 1. When he says, I saw also the Lord sitting upon a throne, he says, high and lifted up. High and exalted. He is high and He is exalted above all. Now the Lord spoke through Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 57 and verse 15. For thus saith the high and lofty one that inhabits eternity, whose name is holy. I dwell in the high and holy place with him also that's of a contrite and humble spirit, to revive the spirit of the humble, to revive the heart of the contrite ones. In other words, he's telling us that God is above inhabiting eternity. And if you want to get your mind all tied into knots, just try to comprehend that. God inhabits eternity. Brian was speaking earlier about that dwelling place. Well, where does God dwell? Well, the Bible says He dwells in eternity. Well, you say, well, that's not a place. But that's where God dwells. He dwells in eternity. His name, he says, is holy. And He dwells with, not everyone, not everything, but only those He condescends to dwell with. He speaks of the humble and the lowly and the contrite. In other words, there's none that dwells with God that does so by right. There's none that dwells with God that does so by power. Those that dwell with God, with a holy God, are only those He condescends to dwell with. God is separate. He is holy. And that doesn't mean that He's similar, but just better than His creation. God is not like His creation, but just a little bit better. And really, when you think about the conception of pagan gods, that really is what they are like. They're like men and women, and maybe sometimes men and women that have been mixed with some sort of beasts, but they're just a little bit better. They're stronger. They're faster. They have more knowledge or more longevity. They're very much like us. They're just better than us. They're just above us in a sense. But the Bible tells us God's not like that at all. God isn't like us just a little bit better. God is entirely separate and above all of His creation. Think of some of the things that He has told us through Isaiah. Isaiah 45:21. Tell ye and bring them near. Yea, let them take counsel together. Who hath declared this from ancient time? Who hath told it from that time? Have not I the Lord? And notice this. And there is no God else beside me. A just God and a Savior. There is none beside me. Verse 22 says, look unto me and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth, for I am God and there is none else. Isaiah 46:9, remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none else. I am God and there is none like me. I counted about 13 times in Isaiah where statements like that are made. Three times he asked a question from Isaiah 46:5, to whom will ye liken me and make me equal and compare me that we may be like? Of course, that comes in the section where God is denouncing the idols of Judah. And he says, who are you going to compare God to? Who is God like? Well, Isaiah's telling us God's holy. He's not like anyone or anything that we know or that exists. And this was obviously one of the problems with the hypocritical worship of Israel and Judah. You see, they treated God, they treated Yahweh, the living God, the high and holy one, they treated him like the gods of the pagan nations around him. In other words, they thought that they could give him token service while all the while disobeying his word, as though God's favor could be bought with offerings and their sins could go unpunished. God says, I'm not like the gods of the nations. I'm not like anything else. I am God. There is none else. There's none beside me. There's none like me. Now, Isaiah opens the book denouncing the sins of Judah. In chapter 1, in verse number 4, all sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward. God's holiness means anger against sin. In chapter 5 and verse 24, Isaiah writes, therefore, as the fire devoureth the stubble and the flame consumeth the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness and their blossoms shall go up as dust, because they have cast away the law of the Lord of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. And in chapter 6, God's holiness is praised. But you'll notice when you look down to verses 9 to 13, judgment is also pronounced. God is holy. And God's holiness is a good holiness. His holiness is a righteous holiness. His holiness is a just holiness. And his holiness means anger and judgment on sin. Isaiah is the prophet that most uses the divine title, Holy One of Israel. He uses it about 26 times. And then when you look, you realize it only appears about 6 other times outside of the book of Isaiah. So it is a dominant title. His title is associated, as we have seen in these two verses we just read, it's associated with anger and judgment. In other words, the Holy One of Israel is presented as one who is holy, who will not abide sin in his presence. But though he is associated with anger and judgment, we also need to see that the title of the Holy One of Israel is also associated with redemption. In Isaiah chapter 54, verses 5 to 8, for thy maker is thine husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, and thy redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth shall he be called. For the Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken, grieved in spirit, and a wife of youth when thou wast refused, saith thy God. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. In a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord thy Redeemer. So that the holiness of God also means redemption. And of course, therein lies all of mankind's hope. Now, we have just got a beginning into the holiness of God in this message. But surely our thoughts of God should begin here with His holiness. He is separate. He is completely other from ourselves and all else that exists. Now, last night's messages both brought out how that we don't reason ourselves up to God. In other words, we don't begin with ourselves, our sense of right, our own wills, maybe the things that we desire, and then sort of expand that with some added power in order to get to God. No, He is holy. He is separate. He is completely unlike any other. Even beginning with God's holiness, we should see any exaltation of man or creature to be an affront to God's holiness. So let's end with Isaiah's words, Isaiah chapter 54, verses 5 to 8 again. For thy Maker is thine husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth shall he be called. For the Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit and a wife of youth, but thou hast refused, saith thy God. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. In a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord, thy Redeemer. All right, that's all the message.